Mike, and the Hot.
We're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, and Oscar Race Checkpoint for you. Hopefully, this time, without technical difficulties. I'm your co-host, Mike One. His co-host also, Mike.
That'd be nice. That'd be nice. The entire block just had a power outage last time, and you said it on the show. You're like, we're a couple of monkeys with coconuts, mm-hmm. and we're sitting there, and just, you know, for an hour, and we had a time crunch, and then we're like, if I plug this adapter into this laptop, but the laptop is not, there's no internet. And then we're like, what if we did it through our phones? And I was like, nothing plugs into my phone. I need a new phone. And you were just, you were very kind through it all. I expected you to be on my case. But I think you did a fabulous job bringing us home and doing those nice trailers So we kind of got to finish what we didn't get to last episode, plus challengers kind of thing, and then we got some more news.
So Mike's got a bevy of reviews for you today that we're going to start off with against the backdrop of, I guess, a box office update, and that is where we can begin this episode, as Challengers did lead the box office, $15 million domestic opening, which is spot on what the expectations and projections for that were, so good job by all the prognosticators out there. Another $10 million internationally in only 7 additional markets. It's right now up to a $25 million worldwide rake. Michael, you've seen it.
Yeah, Challengers is like a tennis version of Bull Durham. It's quite the feat of screenwriting. It's extremely hard to tell a compelling story via flashbacks. We've been over this many times on MMO, but Justin Kuritsky's, he pulls it off here with relish, and Luca directs the hell out of Challengers. I am a big Luca fan after his last few movies. Certainly, we love parts of Suspiria. Call Me By Your Name was a big Oscars hit and a movie we both like, the Michael Stuhlbarg speech, etc., and a Bigger Splash. I mean, I'm going to be a Luca fan since a Bigger Splash. So he continues to innovate. And I mean, you know, you're getting the ball cam, the tennis ball cam.
Well,
I got to do a little shtick here because, like, look, I mean, Guadagnino, the bag of tricks is huge. I'm still doing shtick or am I not? No, I mean, I thought the tennis was fast, was believable. There are critics out there that really negged the tennis. Now, there's some clunky moments where, like, Zendaya just, she doesn't move from her spot, but her form is terrific, and she's crushing the ball, but she doesn't move from her spot for, like, 12 volleys in a row. Like, okay, I mean, I guess she can't move and hit it with that force, but other than that, I mean, he's using every camera trick in the book. You got great editing. I love that. I thought the sports movie aspect of it really worked, and then you just got this romantic saga told over the course of what, like 15 years. And look, I mean, it's not the male gaze that you would come to, you know, quote on, right? I mean, the male gaze, the heterosexual male gaze that we've all, you know, been accustomed to in the 1980s and 90s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not our male gaze, unless we're discovering things about ourselves in this particular episode. But refreshingly, there's no barrier to entry here. I mean, if you can watch Top Gun, bros, you can watch Challengers. You're not going to have a problem. It's not a parade of weird dicks. You don't have to worry. Well, except for that one scene. Mm-hmm. But still, Dean Top
Pelton,
Gun.
Dean Pelton and Community. This better not awaken anything in me.
But like, what's fun about these types of steamy love triangle stories is like you are gonna side with characters, and you are gonna apply your own experience, and you're going to apply your own perspective, and it's like that perfect date night movie where you could like argue about it or whatever, and it's just an engaging romantic drama thriller with a sports movie aspect to it. And I just B plus all day. 87. I was wrapped up. The audience was wrapped up. Like, we need more movies like this, Mike. And I'm thrilled to see Luca use his cachet, you know, to get this one done. In terms of Oscars, like, I'd be a little surprised if it had legs to go all the way.
Okay.
Because, you know, the characters are chewing scenery whenever they're not eating and chewing phallic-shaped foods. But
the movie... You know what kinds of foods are dick-shaped? The best kinds.
I was literally thinking of Jonah Hill's rant throughout the movie, like churros and bananas. Just constantly. It's fine. I mean, you got to get a kick out of it. And Luke is not subtle. He's doing it on purpose. So
right.
I give him credit. And but overall, like, I mean, the script is really, really impressive. All flashbacks. I can't believe that he pulled that off. The editing, the sound, really fast and furious. The movie has great momentum for the vast majority of it. I think I counted one lull where I'm like, you know, maybe tighten that part, but whatever. I mean, as sports movies go, really strong. And then I think Luca had too much fun with the Reznor and Ross scene, score, excuse me.
Yeah.
The Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross score is this techno music. And I think he's just like, you know, I'm playing this techno music over the dialogue because I need to use it as much as humanly possible. And I just got a kick out of it every time. And so, I mean, Challenger's a lot of fun. I'm rooting for it. I've seen much worse nominated for Oscars, dude. I mean, we can go down the list and just trash a million movies right now. So if Challengers gets nominated, happy for it. I could see screenplay as a possibility. We'll see.
I will give you $500 cash right now if you can dare guess spot on what the backdrop of Luca Guadagnino's next movie will be. Because this is a man that has gone from, like, beautiful, sprawling Italy downtown to a remake of Suspiria to now doing a tennis movie.
Well, any guesses? We know the movie Queer, but with Daniel Craig is coming out. So you talking about the movie after that?
What do you think his next endeavor is going to be? Just if you had to guess, if you didn't know what it was, because I don't know. I don't have an answer. I'm just guessing. Like, can you possibly, like, put your finger on the pulse of what Luca Guadagnino is thinking about doing? I don't know that it's possible.
Well, his film Queer is coming out next
right,
month.
Right, right, right. No, I'm saying, like, you know, if you had to pick that. Something. Yeah, after that. Something just for fun.
So Suspiria, bigger splat. I would hope it's in a sunny place. So all right, I think he's enjoying. You know, he's an Italian man who likes
Suspiria
the breeze and the sun.
No,
you're right.
Yeah.
Well, that was his least successful. So now he knows. Sun, vibes, music.
And people
Coachella.
He's
going to make a movie about Coachella.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. I would not be surprised about that. You may have nailed it. There you go. Further at the box office, Unsung Hero did 7.75 million, another faith-based surprise from Lionsgate. Second place on its first weekend. They got to be happy about that.
Oh, yeah. Lionsgate again.
Mm-hmm. Godzilla X Kong, another 7.2 in its fifth weekend. It's surpassed $500 million worldwide. It's up to 519 for its worldwide rank. Civil War, still in the top five. It's got another $7 million coming in on its third weekend. It ranks in at number four this weekend. It overtakes Uncut Gems as A24, second highest grossing ever, behind Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Good.
We'll see what more that can do there. Big success for A24. And then Abigail finished at number five for its second weekend. $5.2 million, up to $28 million worldwide. Though its budget was estimated to be $30 million. So probably not going to make profitable money there in theaters anyway.
Yeah, I was satisfied with Abigail. I think it's coming on the kind of the edge of a bunch of horror movies in a row that people went to see. But like, look, the setup is too long. There's some mismarketing involved. A lot of people have covered it. I think they're trying to hide the ballerina vampire aspect of it. But if you go in knowing it's going to be a ballerina vampire splatterfest, you're still not disappointed. You get what you paid for. I really enjoyed some of the performances. Like the ballerina vampire herself, Michael, Alicia Weir. She's quite the talent. Maybe the discovery there. I don't know if she's been in other stuff as a child actress, but she's very good. Catherine Newton, though. Young Lisa Frankenstein herself. She's great. She steals so many scenes and sequences. She's got one horrible sequence. I wish they cut it, but otherwise, I'm a big fan of hers. Melissa Barrera, a bit unbelievable with their sleuthing in terms of, you know, I mean, it just, she's like some normal character. She's just like sleuthing the entire time. I don't, whatever. I mean, it's fine. She's very clever, and she didn't need that to be the final girl or whatever, but her rivalry with Dan Stevens is a lot of fun, and the action's good. And bottom line, though, you get all the ridiculous tropes of the genre. I mean, they keep splitting up and rationalizing in very talky ways why they're splitting up and trying to encounter the monster separately as the best survival method. So, and, you know, if you lean into all those goofy-ass tropes and make these scenes and sequences playful, I'm going to be happy. And I was pretty happy with Abigail, like you teased on the last episode. B84 all day for me.
Do they land the ending?
Yeah, I thought the ending is one of the stronger pieces of it. Definitely stronger than the setup. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. Glad to hear that. Going on with the top 10, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, $3.8 million in its second weekend. It's up to $15 million worldwide, but it's got a reported $60 million budget, so that's not good. I mean, there's going to need like a miracle just to break even on this.
Yeah, I did see The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare last week. It's a solid outing again from Guy Ritchie, who's becoming one of the more prolific directors, especially making man movies of late. I mean, the Covenant was good. I'm halfway through The Gentlemen right now on Netflix, which has been very strong. I'm enjoying that. But this is like Inglourious Bastards without any of the suspense. Just zero suspense. Like, you... I mean, it's essentially the 14th Fist of McCluskey. Oh, what a picture. What a picture. Schwarz. Yeah, I mean, these giant allied goons, the Reacher and the Witcher, they just kill all of these Nazis with, like, no resistance. I mean, it's the freaking, what was the Denzel Washington movie, The Equalizer 3? Just, like, slowly just tromping, clomping around, just freaking killing.
I was going to say more Nazis. Sisu than it is Inglorious Bastards. Yeah.
But I came up with something, though. This is the reverse Downton Abbey Hallmark movie, where instead of nonstop Fifi happiness, interrupted by, we make fun of them, like momentary, oh no, what's going to happen? This is nonstop killing Nazis with a few uh-ohs. So I feel like it only took me 40 years and watching like 10,000 films, but I figured out Hollywood, and I'm still happy with The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. It's still a low B minus for me. Totally, totally happy with it.
Downton Abbey goes on PBS. Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare goes on like the old Spike TV.
True.
Channel for guys. Movies for guys.
Definitely. And we're evil. Like the men, women just want to be happy and, you know, and prosperous. And men just want to kill Nazis. Right. pieces of crap.
Makes sense. Kung Fu Panda's rolling on. It's up to $503 million worldwide after its $3.5 million rake this weekend. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire came in eighth. Dune Part 2, up to $704 million on its worldwide box office after another almost $2 million. Boy Kills World debuted and nobody saw it. Finished at 10th place this weekend. Yeah. $1.6 million rake. Only $840 per theater on average, playing in almost 2,000 theaters. That is not good news for Boy Kills World there. Alien, you went out and you saw it with its 45th anniversary re-release into theaters. It did $1.5 million, and you were in the theaters for it.
Yeah, it's still awesome, folks. And I especially enjoyed getting immersed with it on the big screen. There's a Fede Alvarez, Ridley Scott preamble. So I think out there for like another day or two if you want to go see it in theaters. I know it's available on Hulu right now. But I did it. I went out to theaters. I wanted to see it because we're doing Mike and Alien.
Yeah.
So we'll go in deeper to this rewatch for me. And yeah, no, I loved it. Like, I was really caught up in it. There was like one lull in the middle, but that movie just still snaps. It's still really good.
We might need a new logo artist too for that, because I don't know that our pal Lauren is gonna do it. I've been talking to her,
or did she finally just block us?
Well, no,
you said you've been talking to her.
Okay. Talk to her, yeah. I mean, could be an AI bot. Who knows in this day and age? You can never be too sure.
You make me look cool as a cartoon Mario?
So,
are you going to pay for this one, guys? Are you going to pay?
If somebody out there is interested in making a dollar or two, let us know. You might be able to use an artist. 23rd place. I'm upset you saw this. I'm happy with the review though. Sasquatch Sunset only did 97,562 theaters. It's been dropping theaters, but Mike, you saw it. You weren't happy about it, like I kind of alluded to.
Yeah, it's a bit of a disappointing C+, but there's some caveats here. I gotta be honest about what a kook I really am. So look, at first and foremost, putting my critical hat on, like the plot is a bit meandering. It's spread a bit too thin to cover a feature length, even at 90 minutes. And there's sadly not enough budget to really do what I would love a Bigfoot movie to do, even like a happy, fun, squatchy one. But like, I am a biased true believer. Like, I am a kook. I believe there are real abominable snowmen out there, and they live in the thousands, hundreds of thousands of untouched acreage in Alaska where nobody could touch it, nobody could get close to them. And if you do, they kill you, missing 411. And these are like incredible hulks. Like, that's what I believe. I believe they're out there and they're huge with a Y. And I listen to the Sasquatch Chronicles podcast. It's like my favorite thing, especially when the Knicks lose or when there's a bad movie out. And I that's my happy place. And so a movie like this where you just have, and it's a high quality film. Like, it's really well shot. The scenes are put together really well. It's funny in parts. But, like, you have people in obvious goofy suits. You got these doofy, horny Sasquatches with their floppy wieners and their boobs just out. And it's just a sex comedy, but it does ramp up into more of, like, an environmental fable in it. And it makes it work. They do a nice job, but I don't want that. I want Jordan Peele's Sasquatch film. I want the Max Brooks Devolution book to get a great adaptation. That's what I want. I want the Jaws of Bigfoot movies, because all the movies that tried to be Jaws with a Bigfoot are awful, just terrible. So I'm good with my Squatcher podcast, and I'm a total kook. I'm a nut.
I don't think you and I see less eye to eye on something than we do about Sasquatches. You are just enthralled and fascinated by them. I'm like, this. They're not real, Mike. There's no way something like that exists.
Well, this is as angry as with you that I've ever been, and I'm really trying to just stay pleasant and nice. And no, I mean, look, I mean, the Riley Keough character is great, and I'm trying to ignore what Mike said because I don't want to just go off. But there's so much world out there, man. Yeah. Gorillas weren't discovered until like what, 30 years ago? They just discovered gorillas. So give me a break. Of course they're out there.
What are
there's
you
no,
talking about?
Of course they're out there. They're
we didn't
huge.
Discover gorillas until the 1990s. Is your statement?
Well, I think there was the Sigourney Weaver film in the 80s. So, all right, so maybe the 50s. The 50s we discovered gorillas. So, like, the people are discovering new animals all the time. These things are – everybody says they see them. Everybody. Like, you go, like, in the middle of the woods and – You're out there.
It's not. Whoop! It's not an argument I have enough evidence or care, frankly, to prepare myself for.
Good.
Because I know this is a fervor, a fevered hobby of yours. You love this stuff.
I am staring at my $100 purchase of a Bigfoot Funko Pop doll right now. It's in my best case, my best Funko case. It glows in the dark. It's my favorite.
I'm happy for you.
I'm out of my mind. Anyway, we got some industry news. Thank you for diving into some of these stories. So please let me know what's going on at Paramount. Bob Bakish is out as the head of the Paramount studio. Just as Skydance has made its best and final offer to acquire the company, Michael,
Yeah, we know how best and final offers go in this industry anyway. But yeah, it really does feel like we're in the end game here with Paramount being a self-standing studio and brand. Bob Bakish, who has been the guy at the conglomerate since the 2019 re-merging with Viacom, he was officially ousted from the company by the board on Monday, or he's been reassigned or demoted, or he left of his own accord, even though he's still a consultant there. Take whatever headline you want, but he is no longer in charge. Bakish's tenure ends amidst reported frustrations and clashing with National Amusements president and Paramount majority shareholder Sherry Redstone. It's expected that Bakish's removal may help accelerate a deal for Paramount, which is clearly what Redstone is most interested in and has been for some time. There have been ongoing, and to this point, as of right now anyway, exclusive acquisition talks with the Ellison family-owned Skydance Media, which would be half takeover by Skydance, half merger of the two studios on the movie and IP end. Now, why is Ms. Redstone so, like, hard and fast and wanting and desiring a deal to be done? Well, it may have something to do with the reported $2 billion cash, which could be waiting for her and her alone if the deal were to go down as it is currently structured, according to the Wall Street Journal. It rubs shareholders the wrong way so much that Skydance had to come back out and say, no, we're going to put another $3 billion or so directly into Paramount to try and, like, help with the debts on that side and help with product and output and blah, 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 to try to appease shareholders to make them seem like they weren't just going to fund the buyout and that's it and let the chips fall as they may and carry the debt on. But as it is, currently Paramount's equivalent to Zaslav for Bob Iger or whoever, et cetera, Bob Bakish, he is now just a consultant for the company, and his day-to-day operations as CEO have been redistributed to a triumvirate between CBS CEO George Cheeks, Showtime MTV boss Chris McCarthy, and Paramount Pictures and Nickelodeon CEO Brian Robbins.
I would love to be a part of a triumvirate someday, but... So, all right, here's my question. We have CBS, Nickelodeon, and Paramount Pictures. They're all going to be sold together, or is Paramount Pictures going to be spun off and sold separately to Skydance?
It sounds like it's going to be, I mean, it's all under the Paramount umbrella. Paramount is the head company. They own Viacom, too, which had a couple of those, like Comedy Central and a couple of those. Okay. But it's all, I think, going with this... They want to call it a merger, but it's an acquisition to Skydance. Mm-hmm. Unless, I mean, now there are other companies that are sniffing around and willing to make, like, there's a Sony and Apollo, I think, team up that they're willing to make an offer for. But right now, the talks have just been between Paramount and Skydance. I think this is, I mean, we're due to see Paramount go somewhere probably by the end of the summer at the latest, if not well before then.
Wow. So, Skydance... Obviously, the studio has done a lot of work with Paramount over the years with Star Trek and G.I. Joe. So this kind of makes some sense, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm looking at this, looking at the movies they've made. So, yeah, I mean, Mission Impossible, Fallout, as Skydance, Paramount, you know.
The Ellison family have been in the entertainment industry for a long time. They have all sorts of money. They're billionaires in their own right. So certainly have the funds to make it happen. It's going to be interesting to see how the language is structured and, you know, if the FCC has anything to say about it. We'll see.
Okay.
But we move on and talk about another studio participant, the 20-year-old film and television production company whose mission was to inspire social justice and humanitarian action. They are shutting down. Those are the opening lines of the Variety exclusive written by Matt Donnelly, Michael.
Yeah, this is a bit of a bummer, this story. Participant has produced a lot of awards films, a lot of Oscar-nominated films. They produced some of our favorites over the last 20 years or so. A lot of great documentaries. I mean, you name a documentary feature, five nominees, and they probably had one every other year or so. But documentary feature nominations like Murderball, An Inconvenient Truth, American Factory, All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, a ton of notable Oscar contending and winning narrative features from Good Night and Good Luck, Charlie Wilson's War, Spotlight, Lincoln, Dark Waters, Judas and the Black Messiah. So this is a great loss, no question about it, participant going down. But its hit rate has been has been down of late. And I, on the cynical side of things, if you do look through their list of films, they've made some of the Oscar grabbier films, the grabbiest films in a while. A lot of the movies you'll find on this had Oscar buzz. But I'm not going to besmirch any of those, you know, film names right now. I mean, because this is a sad day. You know, we see a lot of studios talk the talk, but this studio really walked the walk, I would say, Michael, and how they lived their message and put their money where their mouth was.
Yeah, this sucks. A participant is the type of studio we need more of in this industry, not less. Matt Bellany revealed last week that Participant had been up for sale for over a year now, with their founder, eBay billionaire Jeff Skull, having trouble finding a buyer. And it makes sense, as both the Washington Post and Bellany of Puck make the case that Participant, like many Hollywood studios, were carrying a ton of debt. But unlike many studios who do carry a lot of debt, Participant didn't have a lot of assets which they owned to leverage that debt up against. The studio was said to be losing tens of millions of dollars a year, as their plan of action was to jump into films and productions they saw worthy of causes which they could back, as they were founded to be a socially conscious studio like we just talked about. Along these lines, if you go on the Participant website, you can see actual causes the studio has participated in aiding and which films of theirs those causes are inspired by or attached to, which I think is really cool. It's a really unique setup. Like, they have like different activists and activities that they're doing, and they're like, this, it's tied to this film, or it's because of this film, or it's because of this one. We need more of that in Hollywood. But the double-edged sword of that is that that's not a way that a studio can operate for too long, because revenue is going to be difficult to come by, never mind actual profit at all, which they found. And Participants seem to have spent too much time being an investor in projects that were already in production, or at least heading towards production, as opposed to creating their own in-house stuff that they can own, distribute, and license. And that seems to be ultimately what caught up with them here.
Yeah, their last big hit, it seems, was Green Book, based on what I'm looking at in terms of their big list. So that is sad that they couldn't string them together and keep afloat. So there's some alarming quotes in this article from Donnelly, from various higher-ups. Like, there's one quote here: the studios are just not making as many movies for adults, especially ones with a conscience. So there's some alarm, I would say, in the industry that maybe we don't get another studio like this. I would say that after the reckonings that Hollywood's been through, a lot of the major studios are, you know, they're doing it themselves. Mm-hmm. I would also say that, you know, a film like Barbie, major IP, is something where, you know, taking a huge feminist stance, or taking the cause, and people would rather see Barbie than maybe On the Basis of Sex, the RBG film, or Shirley, for that matter. And yeah, these haven't been connecting with mass audiences like the Barbies of the world. So it is a function of the pandemic downturn, I would say, more than the loss of an audience interest, in my opinion, because I do think the audience will be there for good movies. But I don't know. I'm a zealot there, even more so than on the Bigfoot front.
And we all know that's saying something.
Fanatical. Yeah. No, I believe people want to see good movies. They'll find them anywhere. But it is sad that they couldn't figure out how to make their money in the last 6 years. It sucks.
Well, there's definitely something to the idea that, like, the adult drama is on hard times. I mean, we used to see even big studios would, like, put out adult dramas that they knew would have no chance at recovering money from. And they used to be, like, passion projects, or, like, you know, one for the directors. And we just don't see that from big studios nearly as much anymore.
And yet, the big adult drama just won Best Picture and made $1 billion, so that it can work.
But that's what it has to do, right? Like, you have to have that kind of revenue and that kind of return on it for a studio to be invested in it to that length.
I just think they got to be creative in how they price these films. I think you got to make sure you're not going in too big too early, and you got to use all your windowing. Mm-hmm. And something like Challengers might be a huge hit 15 years from now, or it might, even if it doesn't make its money now, it's going to make its money later, and you got to be able to have patience with it. So I mean, I'm hoping people go see Challengers and give it the money that it deserves. But you know, that's a prime example of a steamier version of this of this issue with adult skewing movies. But we'll see. I think people are willing. They just got to be pushed, herded, tased.
That's what we want to hear. Talk about some Tony nominations that came out, Michael.
Yeah, we're not going to dive in too deep, but I like following the Tonys every year because I like to see what big names are nominated, big Hollywood names, big movie names. I think this is important because when we see success at the Tonys or at one awards body like the Emmys, crossover success is possible. Or maybe the industry's like, we awarded them enough over here. There's an Oscars puzzles theory, but it does and can affect the Oscars landscape, Michael. So let's list off some people that got nominated today.
So featured actor for a play, Jim Parsons is in there for his role in Mother Play. Featured actor for a musical, we have Harry Potter himself, Daniel Radcliffe, for his role in Merrily We Roll Along. I cannot remember. I don't know what I clicked on or what my algorithm is. I was inundated with marketing for Merrily We Roll Along. I can't remember seeing a play or a musical, whatever you want to call it, marketed so much towards me as that one was.
What is it about? I mean, did they?
I have no idea. I know it's three people. It's three people, and Daniel Radcliffe is one of them.
Because that could be about anything.
Right.
I'm clueless.
Correct.
I mean, it could be about a choo-choo train. It could be about literally anything.
Is it because it said we roll along, and that's the first thing you thought of was a choo-choo train?
It was.
Okay, fair. I'm just going to put that in the old memory bank, and now I'm going to think Merrily We Roll Along is about a train. That's fine. All right. Lead actress for a play, Jessica Lange for her role in Mother Play as well, Rachel McAdams for Mary Jane, Sarah Paulson for Appropriate, and Amy Ryan for Doubt, a Parable.
Jessica Lange has her film version of Long Day's Journey into Night opposite Ed Harris in contention for Oscars this year, we think. So it's notable that she's getting nominated here. Rachel McAdams recently had Oscars momentum for Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Otherwise, we saw Jim Parsons with a couple critically acclaimed roles of late, so especially that movie on Netflix. I forget. Oh, my God. Anyway, we'll be here all day if I'm trying to think of this. But do you think Daniel Radcliffe getting nominated for a Choo Choo Train movie is going to make him more or less likely to play Wolverine next?
Just combining like four different aspects of things we've been talking about into one question. I will not elaborate and just say less.
Fair enough.
For lead actor in a play, Leslie Odom Jr. for Purely Victorious, Liev Schreiber for Doubt, a Parable. Schreiber was on, I think it was Colbert recently, talking about how he just like had a horrifying experience where he was in a play, I think it was Doubt, and just his brain went blank, and he basically had like short-term complete memory paralysis.
Oh, no.
And he's recovered, obviously, now, and he's fine, and everything's okay, but really horrifying stuff. He was on stage and just could not, had no idea what he was doing out of nowhere. Crazy stuff.
Oh, that's scary. I hope there's nothing wrong. Yeah, that's bad.
Jeremy Strong for An Enemy of the People, Michael Stuhlbarg for Patriots.
So Jeremy Strong of Succession, he has the Roy Cohn role, the buzzy role in The Apprentice there, the Donald Trump film that is premiering at Cannes. So the cross promotion at the Tonys could help him. He's also a recent quote-unquote snub at the Emmys, I would say, which might help him. The little snub powers there for Jeremy Strong.
Could be.
He was in that Anthony Hopkins movie about New York, whatever. Gone.
The Anne Hathaway one, right?
He was good in that one. Yeah, he was good. He was the dad. Yeah, he was a jerk dad. Anyway,
it's called, been waiting. Bully My Kid, I think was the name of it.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. I've been waiting for the Michael Stuhlbarg Oscars resurgence, so it's nice to see him getting nominated. I've been wondering what he's been doing other than
commercials.
That's
what we need to do, is just start making up names of things we can't remember.
Yeah, that's the ticket. That's the missing
Bully My Son, starring Anthony Hopkins
and Jeremy Strong.
Jeremy Strong. Lead actress for a musical, Gail Rankin, Cabaret at the Kit Kat Club. Lead actor for a musical, Jonathan Groff, is nominated for Merrily We Roll Along. He was another one. Eddie Redmayne for Cabaret at the Kit Kat Club.
So I love Gail Rankin. She became like this indie hit with me over many films. Climb, Her Smell, Blow the Man Down. More mainstream stuff like Glow on Netflix and The Greatest Showman. So I'm glad to see her having success here. And Groff was also very impressive in Knock at the Cabin. I think we both like his work opposite Batista there. Not to mention, I think we'd both kill for another season of Mindhunter, please.
I have to get it. I've not watched it.
Oh, you really haven't watched it? Oh, no.
I know. Bro, I know. Bro. I know. I know. I know.
Don't you crave like the serial murderer's search for the killer show?
Fincher too. Yeah, I know.
Fincher. Yeah, bro. Come on, bro.
Best direction of a play. Leland Neubauer. No, Neubauer. Neubauer. Neubauer.
Neugebauer.
Yeah.
Or Neugebauer. I don't know. Nuja Bowser. Look, she made a strong feature debut with the Brian Tyree Henry Oscar-nominated Causeway opposite Jennifer Lawrence during the pandemic. So I'm curious to see what she does next. She came from theater, so I'm glad to see her getting nominated here for Best Direction. And, I can't wait for her to make another movie.
David Byrne and Fatboy Slim are nominated in Best Original Score, Music, and Lyrics Written for Theater for Here Lies Love.
I'm a big David Byrne fan, Talking Heads, and I'm definitely going to be rewatching Stop Making Sense on Max pretty soon, and I'm just glad he's putting more music out in the world, my friend.
You'd say you ought to praise him like you should?
I'm not unhappy with the collaboration either, so we both could be into this story. All right, it's time for a calendar segment, and I've been a little. Look it. Don't you dare correct me for saying last year when we all know it's 2024 dates. However, our New Year's Day is the day after the Oscars, so our New Year's Day is March 11th. So stop living your muggle life and incorporating your stupid little muggle calendar. Mm-hmm. Just join the wizards.
Did someone come for you for this?
No, I just was re-listening to one of our episodes. Okay. And you were like really correcting me hard. Like, no, it's this year. No, if I say this year or last year.
This is an attack at me personally.
Yeah, this is an attack. Okay. You literally were correcting me. It's like shushing somebody.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, my fault. I thought we'd want the listeners to know what we were talking about, but.
The listeners need to get off the muggle calendar is what needs to happen. Okay. We're on the Oscars calendar. So. Fair. Look, essentially, BAFTA and SAG set their dates, but nothing really moved but the Oscars. So the Oscars moved up a week.
We have just listed 2024 dates for all these going all the way through March.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's correct. So the Oscars moved up a week from the 10th of this year, shut up, and all of the other award shows held their same dates from last year. Stop it. These calendar segments are allegedly necessary, folks.
Allegedly, yes. That way they won't hold up in a court of law if you say that.
But the Oscar shortlist, they moved up a little bit, so they're going to be December 17th of 2024. The Golden Globes are on essentially the first week of January, same date. SAG noms are that same week. Middle of January, we get Oscar noms. We know the DGA is early February on the 8th, same week last year. The BAFTAs are mid-February of next year. The Indie Spirits and the SAG Awards, just like this year, they're going to be on back-to-back days. And the Oscars moved up a week, so there's not quite the long buildup from SAG's Oscars, just like, you know, whatever that is. I can't do math. I think that's a week later. The 97th Oscars will be March 2nd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So we're knocking those off at the beginning of March this year instead of having to wait until the middle. I don't mind that.
I'm good with it too.
Yeah, just need to Sasquatch, and then we can really agree on it. Mm-hmm. Film festival news. Cannes added a few more films to their lineup, including an Oliver Stone documentary about the Brazilian president called Lula.
Yeah, good for him. I was a little, I was getting a lot of articles about the new Cannes films, and I was like, all right, Oliver Stone's got a doc. I guess that's it.
There you go. Greta Gerwig's Cannes Film Festival main competition jury has been announced to include Lily Gladstone, Eva Green, and Omar Sy, and Messi the Dog getting his own TV show covering Cannes, which will no doubt get him every award due to him. Still the best acting performance of last year.
I agree. Hollywood. I tweeted this. Hollywood is indeed a meritocracy after all.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great jury. I think it's a strong lineup, though. I was a little more impressed with last year's lineup. There were more Sundance crossovers at last year's lineup. I expected maybe a few more of the big name movies to maybe pop in here, but now we know what's absolutely not going to Cannes, Michael. I mean, Queer from Luca Guadagnino, starring Daniel Craig, not going to Cannes, maybe Venice. Emmanuel from Audrey Dewan, starring Noemi Merlant and Naomi Watts. The End from Joshua Oppenheimer, starring Tilda Swinton. Mm. Inside Out 2, many people at IndieWire thought that might have gotten a late kind of a, you know, big hit movie playing Cannes, but didn't work for Indiana Jones, so maybe they're cooling their jets on that for now. Juror number 2 from Clint Eastwood, allegedly finished, but not going to Cannes. Mickey 17, we both thought, you know, that it was, of course it was going to go to Cannes, right? Nope.
Play something,
and then
yeah.
Maria from Pablo Lorraine with Angelina Jolie there, not going to Cannes, but I think recent history has a lot of Pablo Lorraine fans going, films going to Venice. I remember Spencer going to Venice, don't you? Anyway, I think
I cannot differentiate Cannes and Venice in my mind to say.
Yeah, that's correct. You cannot do that. It's just you lump all of us furry Europeans together, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. Is that why you believe in Sasquatches?
We'll save the Tribeca lineup discussion for a later date. I was glad and intrigued to see a bunch of those films headed to Tribeca in the spring, but they got a big piece of their lineup still to announce. They started to tease that out today with the Sopranos documentary headed to HBO with the big panel of all the former cast members in New York City. So I'm excited for that. I would love to get tickets to that, my God. But the other big story on the film festival circuit here, Michael, is that Sundance may be moving out of Utah?
Yeah.
How?
Well, the long and the short of it is that Park City, Utah may be too residential and secluded to host exactly what it is that Sundance has become. And that's kind of an understandable issue. Matt Donnelly for Variety reports that 17,000 films were submitted to participate in Sundance last year, which is a record. And the city of Park City, home to wealthy residents who aren't particularly keen on the amount of noise, bustle, and air pollution the film festival has brought to their quiet mountain town, are growing tired of the Hollywood hullabaloo.
All right. So look at the
winter.
And air pollution. They don't give a shit about the
probably
air pollution.
Not.
It's
yes,
just noisy.
I agree with
it's
that.
Too loud.
Yes.
The Hollywood types are talking too loudly on their phones.
I think when they said air pollution, they mean like, I can't get my helicopter to lift off when I want because there's too many other helicopters in the
true.
Air right now. So
okay,
that's how I interpreted it.
That's
I think
the
you're spot on. I think you're spot on there. To me, this also kind of smells the same as like, the Telluride issue for that film festival. Like, yes, Telluride is beautiful, but it's also extremely out of the way and difficult to get to from any major airport. And Sundance and their board, which is headed by the Redford family, are debating whether moving to a city closer to major airports with, perhaps most importantly, a plethora of available screens would serve the mission of this film festival better. Nonetheless, next few years are safe. Sundance is going to remain in Park City for the next 2 years, but the Institute itself will start hearing pitches from cities to be the new permanent home over this summer, and a final decision about whether Sundance will move for 2027 is expected to be made sometime late 2024 or early 2025, or as also Mike calls it, early 2024.
That's right. That's right. That's correct. I appreciate you.
You're welcome.
You're
I'm nothing if not coachable.
Muggle world. I think this is surprising, and I hope it does not negatively affect the festival. I mean, I'm glad that Sundance seems to be too big and prosperous for that city in a way, if I'm interpreting it right with the half full glass there. But at the same time, you don't want it to become so commercialized and put in a city where you're just going to multiplexes to see every film, and that doesn't have the same charm. But here's what I really will be upset about. I don't want all of the old Film Twitter Sundance veterans to be like, I liked it better when you were snowing.
That's
I had to walk through the mountains.
Happen.
And
that's absolutely
going to
happen.
Can't you see that?
Oh,
can't you see that?
I've already started hating it. Yes. That's the
I
first,
already hate
like,
it.
That's absolutely going to happen.
Because like we'll finally get to go. It would be like, yay, we're going.
Right.
And it would be like, Sundance, baby,
they'll
Sundance.
They'll hold it in Hartford, Connecticut instead. And people like,
this is shit.
Yeah.
Compared to what it used
all
to be.
All there is black snow around. It's just dirt snow everywhere. Not my mountainous range of Utah. I don't know. Like, if you have thousands upon thousands of films being submitted, then yeah, go to a place with more theaters. Even if it is multiplexes. I think it wouldn't be a bad thing to get more submissions in. The movie industry needs stars, and they need director star. Like we got to start discovering new people.
True, true. Sundance is a great way to do that, even this past year. Where, I wasn't as enthused with the Sundance Online, but I've still picked out a couple of movies that are still in my top 10 right now, man. So I want to go. I want to go someday. We have to do it.
Yeah. Going to Bridgeport, Connecticut, Sundance. Let's do some trailers. I don't know why this movie's being made. Mufasa, The Lion King, had its first teaser.
It's being made because the last one made $2 billion.
But is this one?
It doesn't matter. The last one made enough money for them to finance four of these. But it doesn't matter even there, Michael, because they know it's like got a floor of what? A billion? Like, what is the lowest you would bet money on this movie making? Lowest
I don't know. Well, look, I thought...
800 like, million?
I thought Toy Story was untouchable and that the Buzz Lightyear movie would be like $500 million minimum. And it did not do well.
Look, this VFX looks awful. The music sounds fine, but it sounds familiar. I thought I'd get some goosebumps from this trailer, and it's just... It feels like a requel. It feels like, okay, baby Mufasa, he has a baby Nala. I don't remember Simba's mother's name. We got the same, you know, he's screwing around, and he shouldn't be screwing around. He does crocodiles, whatever.
Just can't
wait
to be king, yeah.
He just can't wait. I guess he's coming in from the outside lane here, but whether it's going to be a bad guy lion with disfigured face and a hyena and talking to... Dead Lion in the Clouds, and Rafiki and Timon and Pumbaa and the Toucan are all going to be in it too, apparently.
Yeah, I don't get that. Rafiki I get. Timon and Pumbaa being part of Mufasa's life, I don't really understand. Instead of doing the requel, shouldn't this movie just be about the brotherhood between Mufasa and Scar, if you're going to make this?
Yeah. Cain and Abel story.
Yeah. I don't know. This did not look great, but whatever. It's going to make money, like you said.
Yeah. I'm very cynical about it, but I guess enough dads our ages, they'll be fine taking their kids to something familiar, and boom, $1 billion.
Got to escape the heat somehow, getting the AC. I know it all too well with this franchise.
Yeah, you did it last year. Yeah. All right, we got Atlas on Netflix, starring Jennifer Lopez, starring Sterling K. Brown.
Yeah.
So the exoskeletons from Aliens that James Cameron repurposed for Avatar is something we put on J-Lo here.
Yeah.
But you have this after-Earth premise where she falls to this alien planet. All the whilst, we have AIs played by Marvel superheroes trying to conquer Earth, and she has an AI in her exoskeleton named Smith, and they become friends.
It's all the same. This entire genre, everything is now just the same. Every sci-fi property, big budget sci-fi property, I should say, because there are really good indie sci-fi movies, but every big budget sci-fi property just looks green screen to death. It's loaded with CGI that makes it indistinguishable from one another because everybody is trying to copy the Star Wars aesthetic without the IP and the license. The entire genre, I feel like, is dying because it's impossible for any property, original or adapted, to gain any traction whatsoever unless it's one which was already proven to have an industry-sized following in the first place, like Dune. Like, even the trailers are formulaic at this point. Like, there's green screen, explosion, post-apocalyptic or post-post-apocalyptic, score, machine friends, well-known song played slower, smirking bad guy or girl, underdog odds and stakes, quippy one-liner from the star, more explosions and fast-cut fight scenes culminating in one final blast or sword swipe or some kind of sound effect leading to title card. These are all the same movie anymore.
Yeah, it looks kind of cartoony. I wish we could just hire the Godzilla Minus One guys for everything, please. Let them
dress
us. That's
a great example. Low budget sci-fi works.
Well, I just saw Alien last night. It was it was incredible how he made a no budget sci-fi movie, and he made everything look huge and
I don't know what it is about these big budget sci-fis from these major studios where they have to bastardize their property with as much CGI as possible, because that's the only way they can justify their budgets, I guess.
They're justifying their budgets. Yeah, they're stacking it with familiar tropes and familiar images and types of stuff. I mean, this is a blatant ripoff. It's a blatant ripoff, and it sucks because J-Lo is doing some capital A acting here, and I like how she ends the trailer with rage fighting, which I think 99% of us think we could do, especially if we're in like this robot suit. It's an exoskeleton like in Aliens, and we all think it would be a fun fantasy to just go attack and just go out of rage fight, but like really we'd be killed immediately.
Wouldn't even get that full yell out.
So it feels like just another Netflix streaming overspend, doesn't it? Where
yes,
but here's the cynical part. I feel like enough people are going to watch this anyway because it's J-Lo.
Of course they are.
Like, I'm going to watch this on a lazy Sunday, and I don't want to.
Watch this movie, but people will. Well, I mean, if people watch that Zack Snyder movie, they're going to watch this.
I watched the freaking Zack Snyder movie, and it was crap, and it was still enjoyable, and it was crap, and I hated it, and I had fun.
I can't. I cannot bring myself. That's what makes me so angry about Avatar. Like, it's just all the same.
They take the fish and the crocodiles and the dragons and they smoosh them together and it's a croco-dragon fish.
We'll have sex when our tails meet each other.
Yeah. Anyway.
Let's talk about something with some legs, some long legs.
Good job. So a couple teasers here. Couple teasers, and these are increasingly disturbing from the original teaser trailer, Michael. Uh-huh. We have Micah Monroe, Nicolas Cage, neon, only glimpses of the Nicolas Cage silhouettes, essentially. Neon, July 12th, the serial killer film. And I got to tell you, like, to me, the quantity of disturbing imagery is getting a little high at this point, but you're still in for it.
Oh, this is rubbing you the wrong way now.
I don't like all the crying, sobbing stuff. I don't want to really get into the weed. Like, I can't listen to the last podcast on the left when they do all the serial killer stuff. So I'm worried about this director, Oz Perkins. Like, I don't love anything he's done before. So it's not like he's David Fincher and he's making this. And I just don't want it to be.
Sure.
I don't want it to be yucky for 2 hours. Like, I want glimpses of the yuck. I want pieces of the yuck, but I want the brooding. I want Micah Monroe brooding for like 75% of this movie.
Well, I watched Late Night with the Devil last night. Finally, was that too much yuck for you?
No, that was nothing. Okay. That was nothing.
That was a decent amount of yuck in that. Okay. Because I think if that's what we get, then you'll be okay.
Well, what'd you think
then
of that? How come you didn't interrupt my 17 reviews earlier?
you were rolling. It's good. I mean, it's exactly what you described it as. It was good. I the ending is tough to land on those types of movies, but Dasmalchian pulling that character off, I think, is a whole new facet of his talent. That guy, I feel like, can just do anything. But
I am a big fan of his. Yeah,
I really liked it. It was a really good movie. Really fun watch, especially campy horror fun. That said, I don't think this is going to be very campy and maybe not as much fun either, because I watched these two trailers for Long Legs and I was just like, what the fuck is this? I think the marketing's been really good because, I don't know, like, there is enough disturbing imagery to come out of this movie, and I still have very little idea what's... Like you said, we haven't even seen Nick Cage yet.
Haven't even seen him. I don't know what he is. I mean, it looks like he's covered in powder. Is he an albino? I mean,
no clue. I mean, that quick cut of the mother stabbing the child on the bed.
Oh,
Jesus.
Jesus is right. So yeah, I mean, this is like Satanic Panic. Yeah. Obviously this, I mean, that you have the 1980s, you know, phobias on full display here. He's Buffalo Billing, as you write down. In one entire trailer. Oof.
I mean, I have no, like, do we, I no clue what the plot is.
Well, I think he's going to kill somebody and then she's going to hunt him down.
Okay. I'm
just guessing.
But you like, are we even sure, does it say in the synopsis she's an FBI or she's a cop or something?
She could just really like going to the library. Yeah. I don't know what she is.
I have no idea.
I need her brooding with a purpose.
Like Smile, yeah. I like that it bled into the real world. They hired actors to like stand behind home plate at Yankee Stadium and just give a creepy smile. I like that. This is a different kind of viral marketing, but I think it's working.
Okay. Yeah, I think Neon's very creative in how they do this. I would say these trailers went a little far for me. I'm a little more hesitant to see this on opening night now, even though I probably still will. But I'm a little genuinely afraid of this movie now.
I just want to know what the hell's going on.
Yeah. Well, we're going to find out. We'll move on to a trailer for Touch. Okay, so Icelandic film? Is that? Anyway, we have essentially this movie Touch reminds us of other films, Michael.
Yeah, so for this trailer, I wrote down, what if past lives, but instead of reuniting in their 30s, they waited another 30 years... and were compelled to reunite then only due to terminal illness. And then as a kicker also, he may never actually find her. Now go have fun, kids.
Yeah, but what if I'm fighting off an ugly cry for all 2 minutes of this trailer and using all my powers of repression to stop it? What, is that like finally the sign of my nervous breakdown? It's here. It's nigh. And you're committing me immediately after we...
Did past lives bring you tears?
No, past life. No, not really. I don't think so. But this move, this trailer has me just going, oh my god!
Higher stakes.
Brutal.
For him to find.
I don't think he finds her. I think he's just wandering. Just.
Oh god! She comes to his bedside after he can't find her, and he like collapses in the street.
He's gonna die any second. Yeah, he's in bad shape.
Yeah. Well, enjoy your Oscar Touch. Congratulations on international feature. If you're going to have a sad movie, you can win the Oscar still if you're an international movie.
A July release, so I'm proud of the business for, you know, giving it a major American release, and I think it's Focus Features, you know, so I'm rooting for Touch, so we'll see. The Exorcism, Michael, this is a IFC Shudder film, another one of those innovative plays on the exorcism genre, I think. What do you think?
I think Russell Crowe might have given up. look, you've seen Russell Crowe playing an exorcist in a movie, but how about Russell Crowe playing an exorcist in a movie in a movie?
Yeah, he is doing that. So he's playing an actor who's playing an exorcist, and oopsie doopsie, he happens to get possessed while doing so. So it's meta. I don't think these movies are trying to like redo the genre, but it's a little twist on the genre. So I give the screenwriter some credit here.
With all the exorcist movies that have been made since the 70s, it's wild that there hasn't been one called The Exorcism, isn't there?
It's insane. We've had how many sequels to The Exorcist?
Right.
How many Conjurings? How many Evil Deads? How many just random indie films? The Exorcism of Emily Blair.
Right.
You know,
this none is of them the, have just Exorcism. Been the Exorcism. So is he a priest Or is he just an actor playing a priest?
I think he's an actor playing a priest.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but it looks like an actor playing the priest. But yeah, Late Night with the Devil made $10 million worldwide. That was a boon for IFC Shudder there. I'm glad they're kind of taking all their movies to theaters first. This is awesome, right? What do you think?
Yeah, and I mean, look, as I was tongue-in-cheek about Russell Crowe in that too, but he was really good in that Last Exorcism movie, I thought.
Pope's Exorcist was fun.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I don't mind him going back to back here.
It was a good Evil Dead movie, said our scaries, right? One of our write-ins. Yeah. I'm in for this. I think I don't want the tired tropes of the genre. Or at least if you give me that, you better twist it. Please.
I don't know that you're going to get twists, though. I mean, you get twists in the setup, certainly. But he's going to get possessed. We know that.
He's going to get possessed. We see that.
Yeah.
So. We see that. Yeah.
Maybe we need Luca Guadagnino to do an Exorcist movie next with Russell Crowe. And then the world will just collapse in on itself.
I'm good with all of what you just said. the full Monty of that.
There you go, guys. As always, dear listener, we want to know what hits your ear the right way. What do you think of these trailers? What do you think of the awards calendar and also Mike's vision of 2024 never ending until mid-2025? Did you see Challengers? Did you see any of the Abigail or any of the movies that also Mike gave you reviews for? We want to hear from you. As well, as always, you can leave us any thoughts, questions, comments, or concerns you have about anything we do here in the MMO Empire on our social media, as we are Mike, and Oscar on Facebook and Instagram at MM and Oscar on Twitter or X, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com and on Reddit. We are available wherever you do hear podcasts, and if you're listening to us on either the Apple Podcast or Spotify app, if you appreciate what we do here, if you wouldn't mind leaving us a 5-star review, those help us out immensely. Thank you to everyone who has done so thus far. Michael, it's almost mid-2024, just in time for us to unveil a big episode of ours. So tell the good people what's coming next, and let's have some words of wisdom to end on.
Yeah, the 100%
damn right
accurate predictions for the 97th Academy Awards are happening soon. We think next. But just in case, like, Paramount gets sold, maybe we'll do something else next. But I think we're going to do that next. We got Mike, and Alien. I want to do the Arnold voice, and I'm screwing it up. Alien. No.
Hey, no, that was good. No. That was good.
No. Give the people air.
Oh, you're good at that.
Killian. Now I'm putting a running man in there. But
you're Nick Kroll, aren't doing Arnold.
We need Arnold in an Alien movie, don't we? Isn't that perfect? Look.
What would he do?
I don't ask for a lot on this show. You want...
Here we go. This is where the
repressed
anger
comes out.
You
want the world. You want it all.
Name seven things I want.
Blink-182 tickets. You want the Celtics to win every game, and how dare they lose, or it's everybody else's fault. You want every movie to be the greatest movie you've ever seen, aka
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yes, that
or
I
it
do.
Sucks. It's
yes,
terrible.
Correct.
You want every trailer to be made by M. Night Shyamalan. Oh my God, it doesn't end. The things you want, you are demanding. Judgment. Okay, I'm going to stop. I want Arnold in an Alien movie. They somehow got to make it legitimate, though, because Total Recall is so good. I just rewatched the first hour of Total Recall. I feel like it was a missed opportunity. Arnold should have been in both Alien versus Predator movies. Maybe that's a segment. Why Arnold should have been in this. Like, we're going to do a segment with the goo.
Uh-huh.
Like, there needs to be more awareness of the goo in Mike, and Alien, right?
Okay.
The goo is kind of a foreshadowing of the xenomorph.
What if they redo, like, just remake from scratch Alien versus Predator, and Arnold's character is now, like, the president?
I'm in.
That's all it took.
I'm in. Totally get, in. I'm just in. I just want him in there. I want his voice in there. Like get, a good neighbor. I want it. I want it.
Secretary of State. And you title it Twins 3.
I would really love if he was a synthetic. That would be even better.
Mm. Mm.
But, oh, God, Alien 45th rewatch anniversary, whatever, re-release. Fantastic.
It's a great
So movie. The words of wisdom, rewatch Alien.
There you go.
That was good.
Wise words indeed. Guys, when reality sucks, you can literally rewatch Alien with us soon enough. We are Mike and Oscar trying to make award season year-round without the stuffiness. We will see you all very soon.
See ya.